Welcome to Mintel's Little Conversation, real conversations with actionable insights into what consumers want and why. I'm your host, Andrew Davidson, based in New York. The Apple Vision Pro VR headset launched in February with plenty of hype, ushering what Apple is referring to as a new era of spatial computing that, quote, seamlessly blends digital content with the physical world while allowing users to stay present and connected to others. At $3,499, Vision Pro comes with a hefty price tag that has prompted Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg to come out fighting, saying Meta's Quest 3 headset is not only better value at $500, but a better product overall. The debate has brought the concept of the metaverse, a hot topic that exploded in 2022, back into the tech conversation after AI dominated the headlines last year. So we thought this would be a great topic to dive into on the Mintel Little Conversation podcast. Is Vision Pro a game changer? Did the metaverse just get resuscitated by Apple, or has it been trundling along the whole time while attention shifted to AI? Joining me to discuss all of this, I'm delighted to welcome back to the pod Mintel experts Brian Benway in Chicago and Jan Urbanek from Dusseldorf in Germany. Welcome both.
Hi, Andrew. I'm Brian. I'm the Senior Tech and Gaming Analyst at Mintel.
Hi there, I'm Jan, and I'm a tech analyst for our reports team in Germany.
Excellent. Welcome both back to the pod. All right, well, so let's start with Apple's Vision Pro. What are your thoughts on it so far, and how does it compare with other offerings on the market?
Yeah, so I haven't had the opportunity to get my hands on one yet. I'm a Quest user personally, but that price tag, that $3,500 plus tax, that's a stiff ask, especially, you know, for these kind of devices when nothing else is really priced that way on the market right now. I don't really feel that consumers are going to look at that price tag and feel like they're getting the best value for their money. It's very impressive tech. Don't get me wrong. It's very similar, comparable to a full-fledged MacBook under the hood there. But that is kind of just what it is. It's a MacBook with cameras attached to the front. I don't think anybody's sitting on the subway with a MacBook in their messenger bag thinking, if only I could strap this thing to my face and get some work done. You know, I just don't think anybody's complaining about that missed opportunity there. The reviews for the device are positive. Everywhere that I've looked, I've seen like it's good quality, good build. It's a great product. It's Apple. You know, they're not going to put out like a piece of junk. They do their work. But on social media, I've seen a lot of complaints about like some bugs in the interface, the weight of the product. It's still a big, heavy thing on your face. And that's one of the main hindrances to VR and AR devices, is that nobody wants to wear something on their face that, even if it's not terribly heavy, it's still a massive, chunky thing on your face for hours at a time. Nobody wants to do that. The Vision Pro is a low volume product. Apple, when they announced it, they had expectations that it was going to be a low volume. This is an initial offering. And Bloomberg has already started reporting that people are starting to return theirs within the 14-day window. So I think a lot of the hype was around people wanting to get their hands on it, see it, try it out, and they return it within those 14 days and get their money back. Apple has already said they're working on successor follow-up models. They said four more products until they get to an ideal version. So this is sort of not even a beta model of what the end result will be. So if they stick with it, and I think they probably will, we'll see how it shapes up after that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can only agree. And I mean, from the concept, it does largely the same as the Quest 3, because it's fully VR, and you also have this pass-through technology, which often reviews for the Vision Pro describe it as being the best on the market so far. So pass-through is basically that you still see your surroundings while wearing the headset, and then you can augment your vision with anything you'd like. It could be a browser tab or a video, anything you really want. And what you already pointed out here, I think, are two great differences in terms of the strategy between Meta and Apple here, because Meta has been betting very strongly for a long time on the entire VR category and also on the metaverse. So what they are doing is trying to build up this entire market by really pushing out devices at a comparatively low price. However, they also have to bite the bullet and pour lots of money into this. And Apple doesn't want to do that. Apple is typically all about profitability, and they want to also maintain that profitability per device here. So they kind of know that it isn't a mass market and there wouldn't be mass market demand for the Vision Pro. So they really try to focus on a smaller target group of really enthusiastic, Apple enthusiasts on the tech early adopters here. So they can maintain a certain profitability with their device while also making sure that they show that they have their capabilities in that category and also build their capabilities here. Because as probably of many of you know, Tim Cook has been very vocal about his vision about augmented reality and that it's basically a good portion of the future of devices.
Well, yeah, I mean, you both mentioned, you know, the investment here. I mean, so clearly Meta and Apple are going all out in this space. How interested are consumers in these VR headsets? So what do you touched on a little bit there, Jan, but what is the market opportunity, do you think?
I mean, in terms of ownership, it is still very, very niche in Germany, at least for what I can speak of. The ownership sits at a very low single digit share of consumers who have a VR headset in the household. Unsurprisingly, ownership is skewed towards younger males who are typically most likely to adopt such technologies. They are typically the early adopters here. They are most gaming enthusiastic typically, so that isn't a surprise. However, it is important to note that even among this most inclined and most open target group, still only a minority of them really own such a VR headset. However, on the positive side of things for this category, we do see considerable interest among consumers in VR headset, and that isn't only limited to younger males, so it extends way beyond that. So there's definitely great potential for growth, at least in Germany. I'm not sure how is the situation in the US.
It's very similar. In the data that we track, about 9% of gamers have had a chance to play VR in the last 3 months. So you know, it's small. It's definitely the smallest segment that we track, but it does appear to be growing. I remember, 2020, maybe 2021, when VR was only 1% of the market, the total video game market. So it's definitely growing. And the active VR gamers, like you were saying, they're highly enthusiastic early adopters. Whenever we ask them what they're interested in, what they want to buy, they over-index for wanting to get more into video games and more into tech almost every time, to such a degree that it's startling. Also, from our recent gaming trends report for 2024, we had 43% of gamers were interested in buying a new VR device. So the interest to get one of these devices is definitely there. However, the price tag, I think, is one of the biggest sticking points. We asked gamers what they wanted to spend on a VR device. The $500 plus models were outside of the budget for most people. Around $372 was the average price that people were feeling like it was expensive, but they would still be willing to pay it. Again, $500 models, just kind of out of the realm. And Apple's Vision Pro is way beyond that. So I don't know how Apple is going to bring that cost down, but I think they have to. Meta sold 20 million Quest 2s as of 2023. The Quest headset is selling faster than the Xbox, which the Xbox Series X and S has only sold around 21 million as of last year too. So, you know, Meta is just nipping on the heels of an industry giant there with this. So I definitely think there's some interest. However, 40% of consumers want to play video games with their VR devices. Only 16% want to work with social media or do their actual job. And then 33% aren't interested in using a VR device at all. So I think for Apple pushing the spatial computing aspect, I think they've got their work cut out for them.
I mean, you hinted at a really good point here and a really important one, which is the value proposition of VR headsets. I mean, it might work differently for Apple's Vision Pro, which is much less about gaming, but historically, looking at the VR category, it was very much focused on gaming and entertainment, and lots of these devices currently still are. However, when looking at VR headsets, it is important to note that they don't necessarily benefit all types of gamers. For example, I myself would consider myself an engaged gamer with a certain willingness to pay for the hardware. But personally, I wouldn't buy a VR headset for gaming purposes because it simply doesn't match the games I play and what I look for in games. And quite similarly, watching movies and watching series is a pronounced use case consumers are interested in using VR headsets for. However, it is also important to keep in mind that the occasions in which consumers watch videos, watch movies, and the motivations behind it are vastly varying. So, for example, on a Saturday night, you might want to watch Star Wars, an immersive sci-fi movie, on your big flat screen in your living room. And you could easily imagine how a VR headset can add value because it can make this entire experience more immersive. However, in other occasions, you might want to watch football with your friends on your sofa, where a flat screen simply might work. A regular TV might work better. And in other occasions, you might want to watch or have something running in the background, such as a casual series like How I Met Your Mother, while you do something else, while you are cooking, or I don't know, whatever you want to do. And in such use cases, it could easily feel like overkill to strap an entire VR headset onto your face. So what I'm trying to say here is that VR headsets can add valuable new choices, valuable new options for consumers to experience entertainment, to experience gaming, for instance. However, they don't necessarily substitute established ways how consumers experience that. And that also means that if you are only going to use it occasionally, the entire utility of the device might simply not be enough for you, despite your interest, to really pull the trigger on your purchase interest here. So the question is, what can brands do? And I think one obvious opportunity is to really showcase how VR headsets can be beneficial outside of the entertainment and outside of the gaming realm. And in fact, I mean, yeah, gaming and entertainment are the leading use cases consumers are looking for with VR headsets. However, they are also interested in using it for example, cultural or educational experiences. And I think Meta already does a really good job here. I'm not sure, have you seen the ad where Meta promotes the Quest 3 to learn how to play the piano?
Yeah, I've seen those.
And I really like it, so let me quickly describe it. So in this ad, there is a young woman who as a child used to play the piano with her grandmother. And now that she grew older, she considers buying a piano to learn it again. However, it's too expensive. And due to that, she gets herself the Quest 3, which you can use to learn how to play the piano. And she does that, and then she reunites with her grandmother, and they play finally together alongside on a real piano. And I think it's just a neat ad because it adds so much emotional and social value to it, but also shows how you can use VR headset outside of the regular entertainment or gaming use cases. And I think that's just really important for the category to grow out of its niche by broadening the appeal and also underscoring its value. But another important thing to keep in mind here is that the vast majority, at least for German consumers, have never used a VR headset before. So they have zero experience with it whatsoever. And it is a device that is typically built around offering a really unique and new and immersive experience. So it is important for a consumer to experience that before they make a purchase, because otherwise they would buy a pick and a poke, basically. Mm-hmm. And the challenge is that you don't necessarily often have the opportunity to experience a VR headset. So I went to a leading electrical goods retailer here in Düsseldorf and was looking at their VR headset offerings. And the only headset that was in store was the PlayStation VR 2, and you couldn't even try it out. And that is certainly a big challenge for the entire category.
Well, certainly a marketing opportunity.
Having like group sessions with VR where you've got one VR headset that you're trading it around to a lot of people. those VR headsets, they get sweaty. You know, I don't know. Me personally, I wouldn't go press my face up against a VR headset that was like a display model available at like a Walmart or something. Like, I just wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Just do it. Not a Clorox wipe wouldn't do it for you, Brian.
Yeah. Need like a whole bottle.
All right. Well, Mark Zuckerberg recently spoke about Meta's Ray-Ban smart glasses in an interview. And he said this. He said, think of the glasses as the next computer generation's phone and the headset as the next generation's computer or TV screen. So it's interesting that he was mapping out this vision. He also made the comment that he thought that with AI now embedded in the glasses, which is a relatively recent development, that they will now sort of really gain traction and become ubiquitous. So his vision is fascinating. I mean, if Zuckerberg's vision plays out in the next 5 years and, you know, say we're all wearing these AI powered smart glasses, what are some of the considerations for brands and advertisers? I mean, you know, my mind immediately jumps to things like privacy concerns. And I think about the glasses, identifying the brand of the jacket on the person I'm looking at, or as I'm walking down the street, looking at various stores, being spammed by a coupon every time I glance in the direction of a store. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, talk about ad hell, just beaming right into your eyes. When I saw the Meta Quest 3 announcement and these Ray-Ban announcements, I have to say, even as a user of Quest headset, the Ray-Bans like jumped out at me. I was like, yeah, that's it. That's the future. That's where this is going. Do that. Focus on that. It's the right form, the right fit, $300. That's the right price. I really feel like that's the direction that I want to see the entire category moving towards. Get that Quest 3 down to that Ray-Ban headset size. Get that Apple Vision Pro. Maybe Apple Vision can partner with Oakley's and get their own headset out there that are a pair of sunglasses. But I really feel like that was it. That was exciting to me. That said, I don't think that mobile phones are going to be going anywhere. I think that people are dying to get real buttons back in their cars. You know, these touch screen car devices, people hate them. You know, you want a button, you want to have that tactile feeling. I don't think voice commands for phones, for the glasses are really going to take over. I think integration with the mobile device, something where you can have your glasses on, but you're controlling things through your smartphone and you're looking down, or maybe you've got smart magnification. So you've got your phone in one hand and you're looking in another direction, but you can still see what's going on your phone screen and you can interact with that. I think tying those two products together is a lot more compelling than having the glasses completely supplant mobile. I just don't see that working out. But that said, I do, before I buy these Ray-Ban's glasses, and I'm pretty excited about them, but I'm not sold yet. I want to see more practical use. I haven't seen a whole lot of advertisement for these things yet. I haven't seen a lot of use cases. Haven't seen people talking about them very much on social media. The AI is neat, but like you mentioned, that just makes me think like, okay, are cops going to be able to wear these and visually identify people and use the AI and know, be able to see your ID the minute they look at you? You know, there's a lot of worries behind that sort of stuff. But I think it is exciting, and I think it is a direction that I want to see the industry shifting towards.
Definitely a good point. So I think privacy concerns are absolutely valid here. And I think especially for Germany, consumers tend to be quite vocal about those, about privacy concerns, about surveillance concerns, which likely is historically driven. So yeah, I think that's certainly a barrier to address for brands in that regard. And to be honest, it does feel odd if someone points their phone at you on the train and you might be recorded or not. It just evokes this kind of, I don't know, an odd feeling. But on the other hand, you could argue that consumers have gotten fairly used to smartphones being around, which technically are potential bugs in everyone's pocket. And you are at risk of being recorded in public spaces because everyone is running around with their smartphones in their hand, maybe having a video call. You don't know what they're doing actually. So having said that, smart glasses with video cameras certainly intensify this entire situation, but I wouldn't necessarily say it's an absolute no-go. And I think there is a chance that consumers could also adopt and adapt to that scenario. However, when discussing the Meta Ray-Ban smart glasses, it's important to highlight that there is a certain limitations in the functionality, because currently they don't have a screen, so they don't have any augmented reality features in it. So the feedback that you would get from the AI would largely be driven by voice. So for example, if you'd use the AI in a store and you hold an orange juice package in your hand, you would have to use the smart glasses to take a photo of this orange juice package in your hand. And then you could ask the AI, hey, Meta, is this orange juice brand in my hand supporting local farmers? And then theoretically, the AI would give you an output, but that would be based on voice. And you can easily see how the entire accessibility of this AI and the functionality is still quite limited. Mm. However, I think it's still quite impressive that we have this technology. And maybe if we think we integrate augmented reality features in the glasses where you don't have to rely on voice output, but you could see it as text, for example, and maybe you have some gesture control in it that it makes this entire accessibility much more convenient, then I definitely see potentially really interesting use cases here. However, having said that, it isn't as easy as might sound, because putting all that into glasses while having them still be sleek and something that consumers would want to wear in public is definitely a challenge. And I don't think we are here now, and we potentially might not get there in the next 5 years. So that is, still some time ahead to really get this a reality.
They've got some time to do some R&D on it. Yeah.
Sure.
Zuckerberg sounded so bullish about it. And of course, you know, we've seen iterations of the past, like Google Glass, and we saw Snapchat launch spectacles, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, and those all sort of faded away. So interesting to see, it seems to have been getting some momentum now with AI.
Yeah, definitely. And if you put all this technology into the smart glasses, you could imagine some interesting use cases. Just imagine, I don't know, if you specify to the AI that you would prefer shopping for sustainable brands at the point of sale, and maybe you have a nut allergy, so you want to avoid product with nuts in it, you could imagine that you go through the store and the smart glasses basically automatically highlight products that you would more likely, or you would resonate more with you when looking at a shelf, or that you should avoid maybe. So that is definitely something that could be possible. Although, yeah, as I said, that's some time ahead in the future, I guess.
I have to say, as a parent of a child with a peanut allergy and a nut allergy, that would be amazing. So I like that idea. I hope that gets built into it as a use case.
And I mean, it's only one potential use case scenario, but you could easily see how that affects how the knowledge base of consumers and how consumers behave at the point of sale. And it obviously would also question like the established meaning of packaging, you know?
Yeah, I think that should be developed just for people with allergies. There's just a perfect use case right there.
I mean, the most killer use case is obviously accessibility. So just imagine a vision impaired person having glasses describe what they actually see in front of them, in which street they are, what kind of building they see. That is a major, massive use case. It could have. Yeah, incredible.
Of course. Yeah, and then with the sensors, it'll show, you know, indicating where there are a step or a wall or some other barrier. All right, so that's the devices. But let's bring it back to the metaverse, which is, you know, kind of, you know, we started talking about the metaverse back in 2022. I mentioned up front how obviously all the dialogue, all the conversation has been, around AI recently. But where are we with the concept of a metaverse? I mean, back in 22, of course, Meta, you know, Facebook rebranded to Meta, and everyone started talking about this. Now it's, you know, in the recent months, gone relatively quiet. Where are we with it, though? And where is it on its growth trajectory?
Yeah, so the metaverse as a term and as an actual thing, both exist somewhat nebulously. obviously, it refers to a virtual world where users represented by digital avatars engage in three-dimensional virtual spaces centered around facilitating social and economic connections. I mean, that's the idea that's been pitched. We've all kind of heard some various form of that. It all started from this book, The Snow Crash, where it is a sci-fi novel. It kind of invented the idea, and it's basically like The Matrix, right? That's the understanding that I think everybody can most easily grab onto and understand is the metaverse is going to be a digital world, kind of like The Matrix, kind of like Ready Player One. You know, we've all seen these movies and they've been kind of the touch point for this entire thing. But really getting beyond that, what is the metaverse? Once you start getting into the specifics of it, that's where you start seeing deviation. Basically, does the metaverse, is that Web 3.0? Some people say yes, some people say no. Does it have blockchain? Is that a core functionality that everything runs on the blockchain? Is it a decentralized system where it's going to decentralize the internet and spread the power to the people? Again, these are things that people with competing visions for the future are trying to put forward and apply to the metaverse. It really is kind of the ultimate tech buzzword bingo card. You know, any tech buzzword idea that you can have, you can apply that to the metaverse and say, that's what it is. And everybody just, yep, okay, sure. Because it doesn't exist yet, really. When people say they're in the metaverse, what they really mean is they're in a video game. You know, they're advertising in the metaverse. They're advertising on Fortnite. They're on Roblox. These things aren't really a metaverse. They're sort of dubbed the proto metaverses, but they're video games. You know, I would argue that the closest thing to an actual metaverse that we've had come out so far is still Second Life, which is a, at this point, decade-old MMORPG where you can go in and live your second life. Dwight Schrute from The Office had a character that was featured in one of his moments on the show The Office. But that's really it. It never really took off. It never really caught on. But there's people making stuff in Second Life. There's political campaign offices in Second Life. You can buy real estate. You can sell real estate. You can buy money to spend in Second Life, and you can transfer that money back into real money if you make more of it in Second Life. It really is the closest thing that we've gotten so far. But really, what the metaverse comes down to, this whole thing, is the iPhone, social media, Facebook, these new products came out. Google currently, they took over advertising, and everything is focused on Google search engine optimization. Now they're wrapped up in multiple lawsuits saying that they have a monopoly on the internet. And, you know, all of these big things came out and caught everybody by surprise, and nobody wants to miss the next one. So all of these different industries that are trying to capitalize on the metaverse now, it's the tech industry, the financial industry, the advertising industry, all of these manufacturers who are trying to advertise in the metaverse, it's all these businesses and brands, it's their FOMO, their fear of missing the next big thing, but they don't, the metaverse is so nebulous and doesn't have a concrete design yet. So how do you miss something that's gaseous and nebulous? You can't miss it, but you can't capture it either. Until we get something that's more concrete, I feel like the whole thing, it's anxiety of what could be and missing out on what it might be.
So, I mean, how do you feel about it sort of in the longer term then? Do you think it's going to develop over the next 5 years, or is it really a non-starter?
I really feel like that depends on a lot of things, honestly. I don't think personally any one company is going to be able to build this entire thing by themselves. It's going to take multiple companies coming together. But as we know, you know, that's kind of cats and dogs fighting over who owns it, who gets to profit off it. And everyone is going to want to profit off of it. And so they're not going to be able to come to an agreement as readily as they could to get something developed. If Facebook Meta keep spending billions of dollars every year. I think the last count was $12 billion that they spent last year trying to develop the metaverse. If they keep spending money like that, eventually they'll either go broke or build a metaverse, I feel. But how long that takes, I don't think it's going to be soon.
Yeah, I think the critical challenge is to get consumers on board here, because I'm obviously exaggerating now, but nobody really understands what the metaverse is and what it's supposed to be. And consumers do question the utility. They don't know what it would be useful for. So first and foremost, brands will have to convince consumers that the metaverse has a right to exist and give them a really good reason why they would spend their time in a virtual reality, in a virtual world, and not in a real world. And you could make the case that we already spend time socializing online. And if the metaverse can potentially, with virtual reality, enhance this online socializing, make it more personal, make it more human maybe, then on paper, that is definitely a benefit. But the thing is that I don't think many consumers buy into that, because if we ask them if they find, for example, socializing in online games meaningful, that's only a fraction of consumers who does think so, and it's largely driven by younger ones. But to be successful on a larger scale, you definitely have to take the gamification out of this entire online socializing, and I don't see that happening anytime soon. So there is definitely a challenge to really convince consumers without a propensity for gaming, for spending time in virtual worlds, why they would want to do that, and to convince them how they can benefit from that.
I just want to add, if the metaverse ever does become a thing, and it is possible, I'm not saying it's not, but getting for brands who want to work with that, who don't want to miss out, working with the video games that already exist, your Fortnites, your Roblox, that is definitely still a good idea. If the metaverse does happen, then you've just been spending all this time practicing with these proto metaverses, and you'll be able to pivot to a real metaverse application a lot easier. If it doesn't work out that way, well, you know, 95% of Gen Z adults played video games in the last 3 months. That's an incredible amount of reach. Right. That's only going to continue growing as Gen Alpha steps into their adult shoes. So if you're advertising on these video games, you're not just throwing your money at a failed concept. Like, there are people who are listening, who are watching, and they will see those ads and it will be impactful. So get in there, practice with the games that exist. You know, that's what gaming is all about, getting in there and practicing and getting better.
That's a really good point.
Seems like this hard, you know, we've been talking today mostly about these developments in hardware, and as that gets better and better, I guess it opens up more opportunities for the metaverse to become more of a reality.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, absolutely. But we can definitely expect that virtual reality itself will become more of a thing as the technology advances. But it will become more of a thing for very specific certain use cases, for example, in entertainment, for example, for productivity, but also for professional use cases where we see lots of brands trying to experiment. So that will definitely pave the way. But in order to get to this end game level use case of virtual reality, there is really a long way to go, because as we've said, consumers have so little experience with VR in the first place. Adoption is still very low. So I think discussing this end game scenario is just a bit too early.
But just thinking about that, staying on that for a minute, though, I mean, obviously, if it does start to pick up and if ultimately we get there, right, who will be the winners and losers if the metaverse takes off? Obviously, we don't give stock tips here on the podcast, but who do you think would be the winners, you know, that would sort of come out of all of this?
Well, obviously, it would require devices. It would require components for the hardware. So device manufacturers, chip manufacturers would be obvious winners. But also in terms of the software related things, those platforms, those metaverse platforms who manage to attract huge numbers of consumers, they would have massive opportunities in terms of monetization, in terms of ad revenue, because that's what brands are looking for, advertising in a virtual world where the new reach would be. So basically what the leading online games and the leading social media platforms are now, who will that be in a metaverse world? Where do I have the reach? Where can I advertise? Where can I reach the most consumers? So that would be, those would be definitely winners. And of course, the advertising industry itself would also be a winner in a way, because drawing parallels to what we currently see in video games such as Fortnite, you can have fairly interactive stuff there. So your digital world would be an entire advertising canvas with unseen opportunities. So they would certainly also be a winner, yeah.
I definitely agree that the chip manufacturers, the hardware manufacturers are going to be big winners for this. But your typical FANG companies too, your Facebook, Meta, obviously, Amazon, Netflix, Google. Amazon, Netflix, and Google aren't really doing anything with the metaverse right now, or even VR, but they'll be in a position to, I feel like, pivot immediately and take advantage of that. Obviously with Meta, they're spending billions of dollars to be the platform owner of this new product. And I think they wouldn't be doing that. They wouldn't be spending those billions of dollars if they didn't think that when this comes to fruition, that it wouldn't be worth it. Apple, I personally think Apple, they're in the Vision Pro game only to hedge their bet. I don't think that the spatial computing thing is going to take off as rapidly as they expect or as they would want. I think they're going to hang in there just to play it safe, just in case. If Meta's ideas grow to fruition, they want to be able to have a horse in the race immediately on day one and not have to play catch up for 12 years building something new while Facebook completely dominates them. I think they're going to stay in the game just to keep a horse in the race. As far as losers, personally, you know, I don't want any company to own the platform of the internet. You know, that's kind of a scary thought for me, in terms of like privacy and censorship and who has access to what information and all of that. I don't really want to see any one company dominate the metaverse in the future. I think the brick and mortar stores are going to lose potentially a lot if the metaverse takes off, if everything goes completely digital. We already saw how quickly Amazon is shutting down small businesses on main streets across America. Everybody's ordering things online. The pandemic accelerated that a lot. And then third spaces, you know, it's hard to find somewhere to go and be without spending $40 if you want to leave the house. That's why so many people are just staying home and watching streaming. You know, that's only going to get exacerbated by a successful metaverse.
I definitely agree that the threat for physical and in-store venues is massive. But I have to say that we shouldn't forget that people are very engaged with the real world, actually, and you can easily forget that when discussing things like the metaverse and this future vision. But humans love meeting others in person. They love building real human connections with others in person. And I think this is definitely something deeply rooted in our DNA. And already people are trying to take breaks from technology. They are concerned about their digital habits having negative implications for their mental health. So we're really trying to find the right balance here already. So going more digital and going more virtual isn't necessarily something that consumers strive for. So even if the metaverse would be here and it would be very compelling, I still think that even in that case, there would still be demand for in-person experiences, for physical stores and for venues that offer these kinds of experiences.
Oh, yeah. Like I mentioned earlier, like 33% of people just aren't interested in engaging with AR, VR. So there's always going to be people who don't want to play along. But it's an interesting thing to think about.
Well, this has been a, This has been a fascinating conversation. One last question for you. So this time last year, we had our podcast, Fascinating Conversation. It was a two-part pod on ChatGPT and AI. Obviously, today we're talking about the metaverse. Any predictions for what we'll be talking about next year?
Well, I think AI will certainly still be the hot topic. I mean, we notice it today, how AI is deeply integrated into other use cases of technology, how it plays such an important role. And in particular, comparing it to the metaverse is a future vision. AI is already here and has real world, real life implications for consumers and brands. And we do see how this technology continues to advance. I mean, if you've seen OpenAI Sora and how it can generate fairly photorealistic videos just from text prompts, I think that has some major implications, not only good ones, but also potentially bad ones. I'm not wanting to blame Sora here and OpenAI, because they do take their precautions that everything is ethically safe and it's not easy to use it, at least for harmful purposes. But it doesn't mean that any competing products would meet the same safety standards. So it does bring us very closely to the potentially very dark and dystopian future we discussed in last year's AI podcast.
Yeah, I definitely agree. AI is not done. It's not over. It's going to be the big thing for a little while. I am still very much looking forward to the first fully AI developed and animated movie. I think that's just insane that we're living at a time where that could be a possibility. And I really hope it's just crazy. I don't want to see Martin Scorsese recreated virtually. I want to see the AI develop something completely new and radical, avant-garde kind of gonzo AI movies. I think that is just ridiculous. But there is that bad side with the SAG-AFTRA strikes and everything. AI was heavily featured in that. Where is this going to take us as people? You know, are AI really going to remove these creative jobs from us? Are we still going to have so many people employed to make these things work out? Is it going to open us up to a real situation where we have to implement a universal basic income? These are all really exciting questions that I think AI is just starting to open the box to.
No, absolutely. But also considering the potential misinformation nightmare we could face on social media. So it really comes down to the capabilities of tech companies if they really figure out how to reliably identify AI generated content. Because if they don't figure that out, we do have to anticipate that social media is flooded with misinforming and potentially harmful intended content. And that would greatly foster distrust among consumers in what they see online, which would ultimately also reflect onto how they perceive content from brands online, how they interact with social media. Might they gravitate more towards more reliable forms of entertainment without user-generated content? That are all questions that will be interesting to monitor over the next year, certainly.
Well, actually, we'll have to wait. We'll have to see. Someone shared with me a website of podcast content that was both written and hosted by AI recently, which was a little shocking to see, of course, as a podcast host, although actually, you know, I think what we're doing here is much more interesting. Anyway, thank you, Brian. Thank you, Jan. Thank you, everyone, for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to hear my conversations with Brian and Jan about ChatGPT and AI, then check out episodes 111 and 112 of the pod. Or if you'd like to listen to our first episode on the metaverse, where we looked at the near, medium, and long-term future of the technology, head over to episode 90. And the conversation doesn't end here. Head over to Mintel's LinkedIn and Instagram and let us know what you think. We'd love to hear your thoughts. If you want to know more about Mintel, visit Mintel.com and sign up to become a member of the free Mintel Spotlight community. Make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Goodbye for now, and we'll catch you next time for a new episode of Little Conversation.